This Precure podcast, titled Scientific Nutritional Foundations, will review and discuss Nutrients 101, macronutrients, calories, functions of nutrients, nutrients uptake, transport and metabolism, intestinal permeability, and food intolerance. So this topic here we're covering is the scientific nutrition functions. So the first thing we're going to cover today is macro. What is that, Grant?
Yeah, so people talk about macronutrients, and I guess this is the sort of most basic level of nutrition, is going, well, there's three macronutrients that are going to make up your where you get your energy and nutrients from, and those are, in no particular order, carbohydrates, fats, and proteins. So those are your macros.
So the easy three, the big three that everyone knows and everyone should know. So the functions of these nutrients are?
Yeah, well, I think this is where things get much more interesting, and this is where Nutrition 101, I think, has been overlooked in the past. So let's just take carbohydrates. Carbohydrates are used in the body for energy. Okay. They're not used for anything else. They're not used to build structures or anything around the body. That's it. So they're also not a compulsory nutrient, so, or essential nutrient is the other way of putting it. So carbs. So carbohydrates, of course, we're talking about all sugar.
Yeah.
But anything starchy, so it'll be primarily plant-based. Well, it will be plant-based.
Yeah, so the biggest thing for the carbs, and people understand carbs, and essentially for the last, I don't know how long it's been, but carb-load diets has been basically the staple of an athlete.
Yeah, so it's like somehow you need carbs to function, and they absolutely have their advantages, and we'll get into that to more detail throughout this course.
For sure.
But just to be sure, it's not an essential nutrient. You don't have to eat a single gram of carbs, and I think if you work your way through some of the other material, we talk about the Scotsman who presented himself at a emergency clinic in Scotland in 1966, who was grossly overweight and proceeded to not eat anything for the next 382 days, but yet maintained a perfectly normal blood sugar. So blood sugar, sugar in the blood, is essential.
Yeah.
Without that, you will die. But the point is that if you've got enough fat, you can oxidize the fat and scavenge some glucose from the backbone of the fat.
So moving into that, the fats we talk about, that's our next essential nutrient.
So fats are essential. You have to get some from the diet to survive. So fats can be used in the body for energy. They're a good source of energy, but just like carbs are. But they're also essential in the structure and function of the body. So every cell in our body has a lipid bilayer. In other words, the cell wall is made of fats, fatty acids. And without that, we can't live. So yeah, fats are essential. And unlike carbs, which are primarily coming from sugars and starches, plant-based things, and then breads and cereals and potatoes and those sorts of things, and vegetables, fats can come from both plants and animals.
So give us an example of that for the listener.
So avocados are a fruit that are high in fat. Obviously there's animal products, so something like eggs are about a third fat. Any sort of animal itself, a fish or a piece of beef or something, is going to have fat in it as well.
And then we go on to that with the proteins, and a lot of people go on about protein builds muscle, protein this, protein powder.
Well, protein is an essential nutrient just like fat is, because it builds structures around our body. In fact, you know, the whole idea of gene transcription, mRNA, and building stuff is primarily building proteins. And, you know, proteins are anything like hormones. A hormone like insulin is, in fact, a protein. Muscle is built primarily of protein structures. Skin's built of protein structures. So, you know, it's essential.
Everywhere.
I think the thing is, of course, as soon as you get the amount that you need each day to maintain and build those structures, depending on how many new structures you need to build, you need to build more, of course, if you're breaking down muscle and trying to build more. That's why athletes often need a little bit more. Then you can't store that protein, so that'll be just turned into glucose and used for energy. So we do need protein. We need a moderate amount of protein, with some variation depending on how active we are.
So we go on to about the calories, and that's a word that's been thrown around quite a bit in calorie counting, and a lot to do with the whole weight loss type of thing and weight gain. But really, let's just break it down and essentially discuss what a calorie is.
Well, so the idea of a calorie is, you know, it's just the amount, if you burnt that as a fuel, how much heat it would produce. And so I was trying to standardize it into calories or kilocalories and kilojoules or all the same thing. A calorie and a calorie are almost identical. A kilojoule is about four kilocalories. So it's easy enough to work out. I think what's interesting is that carbohydrate and protein have around 4 calories per gram. A gram of fat, interestingly, has about 9 calories, so over twice the amount of calories, which is interesting. So, you know, one glass half full way of looking at that as well, okay, there's a lot more calories in the same weight of food, so, you know, fat will just give you more if you want energy after. It's an easy way to get it. A glass half empty as well, we've got an obesity problem in the world, and, you know, perhaps it's easier to overeat fat than other nutrients just because there's more calories by weight. I don't think that's true, by the way, and we'll talk about that.
For sure. So we talk about the calories and then what is essential to that. How do they get into the body in the first place?
Yeah, so you're going to have to eat food, aren't you? So
of course,
Well, so nutrition basics, it goes in through the mouth, guys.
Goes on one end, out the other.
I mean, of course, it's possible to get nutrients in other ways. You could be in a hospital and they could run an IV and feed you that way. But, you know, for the most part, we eat it.
Yeah, but for the standard normal healthy human, let's see how that goes.
So if you just think about the gut, obviously starts at the mouth and that breaks some food down. There's amylase in the saliva there that starts to break starches down at that point. Goes down to the stomach, gets rolled around with some acid, and then goes into the small intestine, which is actually fairly long, and then maybe a little bit of processing, particularly for water in the large intestine, and then if there's anything left over, it'll come out the other end. So what goes on there, which is interesting? Well, I think it's just interesting to know how nutrients get processed and where they go in the body after that. So carbohydrate and protein go in, and they could go in at various parts of the whole digestive system, but they end up in what's called the hepatic portal vein. So they end up in a blood supply, which goes directly to the liver.
Okay.
And that's a crucial thing. The liver is just such an essential organ for the processing of protein and carbohydrate and dealing with that. We won't go into that much more now. Most fat, actually interesting, goes in a completely different route. We produce bile from the gallbladder that emulsifies fat, so it breaks it down in the gut into smaller fat globules. And then those goes into things called chylomicrons, little containers.
Okay.
And those are absorbed across the gut. They don't go directly into the blood supply like carbs and protein. They go into the lymphatic system, and then they eventually end up in the blood supply, but at a different place, and don't actually go anywhere near the liver. There's also a couple of special cases of fat.
And give us an example of those.
So, well, the first of this, you know, people have probably heard about things called medium chain triglycerides, and people talk about MCT oil. Well, that just goes straight in the same way that carbs and proteins do, goes through the hepatic portal vein, but probably isn't easily stored as fat and can actually be used directly in the brain as fuel. So that's one special case. The second, which probably leads into what I'm hoping to talk about next, is there's quite a lot more going on in the gut than you think. So
it's a complicated tool, that thing, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, of course, it's filled with stuff that isn't us, so little microbes, and there's quite a few of them.
Isn't there like a stat out there that there is a chemical in there that can kill you 7 times over?
We'll get to that. So we've got bacteria, microbes in our gut, and there's trillions. There's literally probably in and around us, there's 10 times as many non-human cells as there are human cells. They don't weigh as much as those, probably only a couple of kilos worth, and there's probably 1,000 different species doing a lot of different things. Those microbes in the gut are called the microbiome, and it's an exploding area of science. So the question is, what do they do? Well, one thing they do, and this is about fat metabolism, is that they ferment fiber in vegetables and fruits into fat, short-chain fatty acids.
So if I was to give you a bowl of cabbage, let's say.
Let's just pretend we're giving it to you.
Okay, we'll give it to me then. Yeah, I'll eat anything.
So you eat that up, goes in, and there's fibre in there that's not digestible, one would think. So we would expect eventually, and this was the roughage theory of human health, that fibre would sort of scale through your intestines and clean you out, and you would poo it out at the end of the day. We'll start the next day probably. That doesn't happen in healthy humans. That fibre disappears somewhere, and it's really set upon by some of the microbes and turned into short-chain fatty acids. Now, the microbes themselves will use some of that as fuel, and some of that will go across the intestines and be used as fuel in the body and in the brain. So interesting. It's really interesting, I think. Well, at least I think it's interesting. I don't know other people do, but you look at a cow which is eating grass. Well, at least in this country, they eat grass, which is what cows should eat.
Yeah.
And
four stomachs, they go through them.
Yeah. And there's obviously a lot more indigestible fibres, including cellulose, in there. And the cows are able to ferment that with a much more complex process.
Yeah.
Again, into short chain fatty acids. So if you look at what actually makes it macronutrient wise to a cow's bloodstream, it's 2/3 fat. So
you wouldn't think that, would you?
No, well, they're eating predominantly carbohydrates and a little bit of protein in the grass, and that's just the way it rolls.
So we talk about permeability. For someone who hasn't heard that word, what is that?
The human gut is permeable, obviously, because stuff goes across there. Like we talked about, like fats and proteins and carbohydrates when they get broken down enough. But the permeability of the intestines varies massively depending on what's happening to us. And so we think about the intestinal cells have a little gap between them, a little junction, and it's called a tight junction. And that tight junction is held together with a little protein called zonulin. And sometimes that tight junction becomes loose. In other words, the gap widens and stuff can flow through into the bloodstream. And I think that's what you talked about earlier, these lipopolysaccharides are a toxic byproduct of some of the bacteria in our gut. There's enough in our gut to kill us several times over. And actually, there's a biological reason that, you know, when we get stressed, so stress is a major cause of those tight junctions becoming loose, and some of those lipopolysaccharides flow through into the body, and they're inflammatory. And there's really probably a good biological reasons for that. You've been stressed out.
Yeah.
You know, stress typically for, you know, more prehistoric humans was short term, you know, 90 seconds, you're going to live, you die, stay,
fight go. Or flight.
Fight or flight, yeah, exactly. So these lipopolysaccharides flowing in are a great thing. You're getting ready to have inflammation. If there's injury, it fixes it. It's just a good system. Unfortunately for modern humans, if you're chronically stressed, you've got these lipopolysaccharides flowing through the whole time and you're constantly inflamed. And this is a problem called gut endotoxicity, which I think is probably more common than we think.
Mm.
The other thing about permeability, it doesn't just have to be these things. When there's all sorts of other pathogens and other things that could flow through, and some people, even things that aren't pathogens, the body might go, well, you know, you're letting stuff through here, the immune system's activated to try and kill it. So you might end up with something as simple for some people as a gluten or a gliadin. These are proteins in wheat working its way into your bloodstream. The immune system's going, hey, this stuff doesn't seem to be food to me.
Yep.
It's probably an invader, I'm going to attack it. And so you end up with these sort of so-called autoimmune disorders where
the human becomes gluten intolerant.
Well, so the gluten intolerance might be one example of that, but you know, there's a lot of things that could be going on, and it's a broader class of problems, not just to do with how permeable your intestines are, but certainly that can contribute to it. So that's the gut permeability. So I think we've gone...
Yeah, well, I think we've covered it all there at the moment. So stay tuned for our next podcast, and we'll be bringing that to you very shortly.